Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Well, you already lost me at the part where he writes himself a letter, because I did that one time. And guess what? The next morning, I read the letter and I was like, I'm not listening to that fat bitch. Like, why would I listen to her?
Well, hey, it's That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast where we ask, whose fault is it that you're gay? I'm Eric Williams, and if you can't tell, my butthole is puckered. We have my favorite podcasters of all time, Watch What Crappens. Ben and Ronnie are here this week, and not only is this episode God tier, they also shouted me out in this week's episode of Watch What Crappens, the Potomac recap. I just, like, when I listen to that, I swear tears welled up in my eyes. They are my icons. They are legends. They are the moment. And I'm so grateful to them and to you for listening this week. Ronnie did mention how we talk about ice cream for a full 45 minutes. Do not worry. It wasn't 45, but it is the first 15. And if you're not an ice cream person, you can fast forward. But I did not edit out a single second of that ice cream talk, because that is my true biggest love in life. Dairy. Frozen, iced, creamed, custarded. I do want to say that I did edit out some of the other juicy stuff because I didn't want to give it all away, but also give a little gift to our Patreon subscribers. I'm going to give that full unedited episode up on the Patreon. That's patreon.com/gayasspodcast. So head up there. It is the full video episode to see Ben and Ronnie's gorgeous faces. Also, the big news, I guess I really should kind of put in the open, is that we announced that we are officially moving to LA. It's just a relief. It's almost like coming out, where after you do it so many times, you just want to let the whole world know, and you're tired of giving the monologue. And that's kind of how it felt. I forgot we had to tell people, like, in the grand scheme of things. So we decided to post a cute little Central Park pic, and end of October, we are out of here. The moving truck is scheduled. We are not driving across the country. Matt said absolutely not, knowing that he would do the bulk of the driving, and I didn't disagree. I control the music. I tell the jokes. I do not sit behind a wheel for more than 45 minutes. So, my friends in New York, we are out of here the end of October, and my friends in LA, I can't fucking wait. It's going to be beyond devastating to leave, and I'll deal with that as it gets closer. But for now, I'm just kind of basking in the excitement for the move, for the end of summer, and for this week's episode. If you don't listen to Watch What Crappens, they not only recap Bravo, they're just delightful human beings that are so fucking funny, the impressions. But if you are here, there's a good chance you do listen. So make sure to follow Ben and Ronnie, listen to Watch What Crappens. And I will say, for this episode, we do talk more than just ice cream. We go into Bravo. I talk about why I was really actually offended for the first time watching one of the Real Housewives. It was New York. And Ben and Ronnie, we all get into that. We talk about movie musicals, why I hate Dear Evan Hansen so much, and Ben and Ronnie reveal what made them gay. They are such incredible answers. And at the end of the episode, they give me a lesson in a Whoopi Goldberg film I've never even heard of. As devastating as it is to say that, they gave me a gift, and I'm going to be watching it and probably posting about it on my Instagram just so I can share the experience with you all. If you don't follow me, I'm at Eric Wills, and please enjoy this episode. Thanks for being here. Subscribe to the Patreon, leave the review, etc. And here it is. Ronnie from Watch What Crappens on That's a Gay Ass Fooking Podcast. Can I tell you what I was doing the 10 minutes before setting this up? I was just going, like over and over. And then I was doing the Britney version. Anyways.
I want the Britney version. Give me that one.
I know.
Well, If I'm being very honest, I think it's actually John Early doing Britney. It's just a lot of vocal fry. So I'm into it. Maybe she's listening.
What happens when this happens?
Thank you.
Very, very Britney.
Speaking of, when I started this podcast, I put into the universe like a dream goal would it be to have Ben and Ronnie on. And the fact that you are here, I really, really appreciate you. And you are goals and dreams. And thank you so much for being stars.
What a dream. Oh, my God. Just call us.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Dream came true. And by the way, I love
your lamp. Better dreams.
I love your lamp.
Thank you so much. This is actually a relic from my husband, Matt's family. And we are keeping it because we're moving to LA in 2 months.
Oh, congratulations. What's the occasion?
Thank you so much. The occasion is existential dread. It's moisture. It's humidity. It is me trying to convince Matt to go for the past few years. And because we're in New York and I've been here for a long time, we love, but I just want to put groceries in a trunk. Do you know what I mean?
You know what?
Yes.
You have no idea how much that like adds value to your life.
But here's the thing is I think I'm starting to imagine it because I just cannot wait to like have our hybrid moment and then go to a TJ's, maybe even a Costco for feeling nasty. Oh, and then I just feel like and also, of course, like career-wise, boo-boo-boo-boo-boo, but I really feel like quality of life, I just cannot
wait. Yeah, you want to go outside. You know, I did have a Prius for a little while, but then I switched to a Vespa. And, you know, I had like the Vespa moment, like strapping groceries onto the Vespa. And there was like a kind of, you're going to die any second now just because you wanted something from Sprouts kind of feeling that
really added
to the whole vibe.
Wait, was that like your Barcelona cosplay? Were you pretending you were European?
Well, yeah, and I felt like so romantic on it until someone said, "Oh my God, you know that fat chef on the Food Network? He drives a Vespa." It's like, thanks. I guess they were talking about Mario Batali or somebody who drives a Vespa around. And I was like, "That's great. Thanks for ruining my life." So,
and then you had to get rid of the Vespa after that.
Yeah. Or lose weight. So what do you think's going to happen?
I would never be able to strap my groceries onto a motorcycle. I mean, I can barely even get on a motorcycle. I did it once in my life and it was terrifying. But I like to treat my groceries like they're not at Six Flags. You know, I want them to just like be in a cushy, you know, floor of the backseat area.
Pile that shit up with some bungee cords. Do not buy bungee cords from the dollar store. I learned that one. Lost a lot of groceries that way. But otherwise, yeah, just pile that shit up.
So wait, when you're at the grocery store and you're like, this is the one thing that'll make me feel better, which aisle do you go to? What do you buy? Ronnie, you go first.
Bakery aisle, croissants, chocolate croissants, really any kind of bread that's usually white bread. Mm-hmm, of some kind, and then butter, and then cheese, and then ice cream if I'm feeling dirty.
See, I usually feel dirty and I go ice cream, but what about you, Ben?
You know, that's a great question. I never really thought about that because so many of the aisles give me so many, you know, feelings of happiness. But I think if I have to be brutally honest, like I want to say I love going to the produce section and just finding something really fresh. I want to be that person that says that. I think I just go for Tate's cookies. I think I just go to the cookie aisle.
God, do I love a Tate's cook. I mean, give me a glass of milk. We have a David's cookie in our grocery store that's like Tate's younger brother who's a little less expensive. And it's just as stale and beautiful. But I truly am the ice cream Ben and Jerry's. There's a new flavor series called Topped. Do with that what you may, but have you tried?
I've not tried Topped. I haven't heard about it. I haven't even heard of Topped.
Sounds messy to me.
Yeah.
It is messy.
Domineering.
Listen, if you want to have a sub ice cream experience, but it's just like, they call it Topped because it's like a chunk of chocolate at the top, and then beneath it is just a gorgeous journey of other chunks, and it really, I mean, it delivers, and Ben and Jerry's been there for me in many dark times. And
so many.
Oh, yeah.
What's the flavor?
They've also created a lot of dark times. But I love how they're recreating ice cream, you know? It's like, we're going to have core, like where they put
I love
like
the core.
Yeah, they put a core down the middle of it.
Cores were tough for the stomach. For whatever reason, the core was a little adversarial, but then the Topped ones are, for some reason, really an ally.
Oddly, it's like regular ice cream got cored. Like, it got topped and turned into a core. Is that weird?
Yeah. Guys. Yeah, it's like the core is kind of like the aftermath of the topping, right? So I've always been a chocolate fudge brownie sort of person. That's like my favorite flavor. But I have to say, during the pandemic, I've always loved fish food. But fish food really rose higher than I ever expected it to. I mean, it's always been, I think fish food is like a top five Ben and Jerry's. Yes. It always has been. But I found myself gravitating towards it more than chocolate fudge brownie, which was shocking to me. I think I'm like, in my old age, really turning into a marshmallow fluff sort of guy.
Oh, well, that's controversial. I mean, I feel like you're in my head, though, because I was a chocolate fudge brownie girl through and through, college till after. But then I went fish food, but actually I've been tonight dough recently. Tonight dough for me is like everything I like in chocolate fudge brownie. It's got the brownie chunks. Everything I like in a fish food is giving me a swirl. But then it's like there's a peanut butter moment. It's yes, it has Jimmy Fallon on the front, and, yes. and that's a tough thing.
That, well, yeah, that makes it a tough sell for me for sure. The Jimmy Fallon face, like, yeah. like I'm not going to eat you, Jimmy Fallon. Okay, I draw lines. I'm not a hater of Jimmy Fallon or anything. But,
yeah, I'm not a hater, now. But I mean, I'll hate on him for the ice cream's sake because I actually was disappointed with the tonight dough, and so. During like the peak quarantine, I had a night where I ordered from one of these like ghost kitchens. Do you guys have that in New York City, the ghost kitchens?
Yes.
So there's a ghost kitchen out here called the Ice Cream Store. And so I actually ordered chocolate fudge brownie, fish food, and the tonight dough. And the tonight dough seemed like it was going to be the perfect union of all of the above. But I found it wasn't chocolatey enough. I felt like, you know what, because it doesn't have a chocolate base ice cream, and that's what I needed from it. And if I could get that, it would probably blow them out of the water, but I couldn't get
that. Okay, listen, I understand where you're coming from, where you need the chocolate base. That's why when you go to Ben & Jerry's Topped and you go to the peanut butter chocolate one, that's where I think you're going to really find a kindred spirit because there's a chocolate base, there's a peanut butter cup inside, there's a chocolate on the top. I think it really is going to do good
for
you.
That's going to work well for me because I've actually felt like peanut butter cup ice creams or peanut butter ice creams in general, I've yet to find one that really sings the way it should.
Well, actually, I'm sorry to break this up, but Haagen-Dazs does a marshmallow. What did you call it, Ben?
Like a marshmallow fluff.
Yeah, they do that for their Rocky Road, and they also have a very delicious peanut butter. So,
see, wait, that's a good point because Haagen-Dazs does have also a chocolate peanut butter where the peanut butter is kind of ribboned throughout, but it's still kind of hard and crunchy because you need that texture. And Haagen-Dazs is probably, not that we are trying to go to ice cream for health benefits, but Ben and Jerry's, if you eat a full thing before bed, you're fucked. Whereas Haagen-Dazs, I feel like you still have a semblance of hope that you're going to survive.
Well, because it has like the double A's. Yeah, it has the double A's with the two dots on top, and you just feel so like Swedish or whatever, and they're all thin. Like, I mean, how many fat Swedish people are there, you know?
None. And on top of that, it has that very elegant, you know, design, whereas Ben and Jerry's is kind of like going into a coffee shop in 1995. But the bad news for all of us, well, not bad news, but I mean, the truth is Haagen-Dazs owns Ben and Jerry's, so we're really keeping it in the family no matter what.
Wait, I didn't know that. This is a big thing for me.
They bought them a while ago. I mean, I should double check that because, you know, the worst thing is to, like, you know, declare a fact on a podcast and be totally wrong. But I'm pretty darn sure. I'm going to look on my
especially
phone right
about
now.
Ice cream, because ice cream lovers will be pissed.
Well, yeah, I'm looking not right only now. Ice cream, but didn't you get in trouble for the Delaware of it all?
That was
no,
me.
No, that was Ben.
Oh,
that
was me. Ben.
That was Ben.
I wasn't paying attention to my... I was just like, yeah, the DMV is Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia. No, that's actually Delmarva. Which I actually didn't know that Delmarva Peninsula was an acronym for that. That I did not know. But I did know that the DMV was DC, but for some reason I said Delaware, and I paid a price for that.
You sure did.
In the form of tweets.
I mean, yeah, for me, the D stands for don't know. Don't know. I don't pretend to know things I don't. I don't know. You know, I'll Google that shit. But I am old enough to remember when Ben and Jerry's, before they got bought out and sold out and did whatever they did, you know, which I feel very betrayed by, because they used to be made with real sugar and now they're made with corn syrup. And I'm old enough to remember what that shit tasted like before. And now it has that like cheap grocery store kind
it's
of
not
tinge
quite the
to
same.
It.
I agree.
Right. It's not the same.
And so wait, are we saying that Ben and Jerry, are they less of like social, like they're like, because they were bought out, did they sell out?
Well, maybe they sold out, but then they like donated out too. Like, I'm sure that they're using their sellout for good. Listen, I'm from, you know, you're going to LA. You're going to learn this very quickly. You're supposed to sell out. That's the reason you moved to LA.
That's
selling
very
out
true.
Is good. That is the goal. Okay. We're not 20.
From your mouth to God's ears that I sell something. Jesus H.
You know, I can't, I think I may be wrong about Haagen-Dazs owning Ben and Jerry's. I think that maybe Haagen-Dazs tried to buy Ben and Jerry's and didn't work out. But in my mind, I thought they were just like one big family all this time. And I was like, what a great ice cream family. You know, you have got like,
turns out they're terrible rival than they
have. Yeah, you got like the elegant, you know, elegant Haagen-Dazs. You know this.
You know who owns them?
Who?
Unilever.
Yeah, that's what
Is that a soap?
That's what I thought. I don't know. It's a conglomerate. I would have liked it much more if Haagen-Dazs owned them.
Wait, do you guys, are you familiar with the Ample Hills Creamery situation?
Wait, Ample Hills?
What is that?
What's that?
Okay.
Oh my God, you're like a drug dealer. Why don't you just give me a bite for free? And like, guys, like you didn't mean anything by it, and then I'll get addicted like a fucking sicko. Go ahead.
I mean, listen, I've watched enough documentaries about pharmaceutical companies to know that we're all fucked. But
those are so good.
So
until
good.
You find out they're all made by Scientology. And then you're like, whoops, feel guilty about watching that one again.
Well, the Ample Hills Creamery was a small mom and pop shop in Brooklyn. It took over the world. People got obsessed with it. They opened up and then they tried to scale way too quickly. They were selling it in Disney World. They opened up a giant factory in Brooklyn and then they just like went bankrupt. But they opened in LA as well. And that shut down because it was in Los Feliz.
It was called Ample
Hills Creamery.
I didn't even hear about that. And I'm like up on all the new ice cream places.
Oh,
in LA.
See, they still are, but they ended up going bankrupt and then a company sold or bought them, but they bought them for like $1 million when the company had like been a huge, it was like a devastating story. But now it's like Ample Hills is just some like random owned by a conglomerate. It's lost the mom and pop-ness.
You know, I'm so glad we're talking about this because earlier today I was thinking to myself, do I want to go to Carvel today? I was like, it's sort of an effort. There's one Carvel west of the Mississippi, and it's here in Los Angeles by the 405. And so it's very special, Carvel. And so I was really thinking, do I want to make the trek over there? And I was like, nah. But now after this conversation, I think it's like destined that I have to go to Carvel today.
Listen, if it's a Carvel, if it's a Cold Stone Creamery and you feel pulled to go there, you have to answer the call.
Cold Stone doesn't do it for me, actually. I feel like their ice cream is like gummy and like, you know, when they mash it up, it comes out as like stringy and long and it's not quite
Bronny,
right.
Break the tie. Bronny, do you go to Cold Stone?
I think both of those kind of suck, honestly. My recent find is Tillamook Creameries, which is a delicious ice cream that you can also buy in the grocery store.
Is that because of Top Chef?
No, I actually had it the first time because I'm still in Texas and I was looking for a new kind of ice cream. And I don't know, there seems to be different brands. I'm sure that I just noticed it differently because it's like a different grocery store. But I was like, well, that's a weird name. It's delightful.
What? Say it again. Say the name again.
Tillamook. It's Tillamook. Tillamook Creamery. And they're from Tillamook, Oregon.
Wait a minute. I literally have heard about this recently from people in Oregon that said this is the best ice cream ever. And I looked and you can get it in New Jersey by me. But like, I'm gonna track this down.
I'm gonna try it because for some reason, the idea of ice cream made from like a place that specializes in dairy and cheese, for some reason, I feel confident about that. I feel like that sounds delicious.
They know they're lactose, and that is... okay,
it's
I can't
important.
Wait.
Yeah, if you're going to fuck your stomach up anyway, do it by people who do it professionally, you know? the mudslide is my personal favorite, just in case anybody's wondering.
I'll tell you what I think is overhyped. And I don't know if you have it out there in New York, but when you move to LA, you'll have it here. And it's also Portland-based.
Van Leeuwen.
Salt and Straw.
Oh, salt. Wait, so I have had and I do like, but isn't it overpriced?
It's overpriced. And also, I find that after two or three bites, it all starts to taste like just sweet cream. Like the flavor goes away. Because I think that one thing that happens with ice cream is that it's sort of, because it's cold, it kind of like numbs your taste buds or it dulls your taste buds. So that's why ice cream has so much sugar in it, because it kind of has to overcompensate for the fact that you are dampening the power of your tongue, right? And I feel like with Salt and Straw, like the first few bites are like, oh, this is so good. But then like after a little bit, it sort of goes away. And their chocolate flavor is not deeply chocolatey. And you know, I'm a big chocolate ice cream person.
We're learning your standards for chocolate are high. And
they're high.
Listen, I don't judge your standards.
Doesn't have like that bitter next level that like Ben & Jerry's or Haagen-Dazs or other places have.
Well, it's also highfalutin, like Salt and Straw. Fuck off with your salt. We're talking about ice cream. You know, it's a very highfalutin. And isn't that the place that makes ice cream? Like they'll make mint ice cream with real mint. No, get that the hell out of my ice cream.
Mint.
It's ridiculous.
But I will say that if you're making a banana ice cream or eating, if it's a fake banana, I will not fuck with that. I think it's
right.
I think
real bananas
fake
okay.
Banana's the worst.
Yeah,
that's
real
like
mint.
God intended that to be a dessert.
Yeah, like why do you even need it to be fake? Just use real banana. It's better.
And that's my hot take about Cold Stone, is I have a good banana ice cream. Sorry.
Okay. Bananas. That's bananas itself.
Wait, I do want to tell you that last night I was sitting on the couch with Matt and we were watching Beverly Hills. And I was like, first of all, we had an edible that we didn't know how intense it would be. And so it was. But we are watching Beverly Hills and I'm like turning to Matt and like, I'm going to be face to face with Ben and Ronnie tomorrow after what I consider to be a top 10 episode in the franchise. When I say top 10, do you agree or disagree?
Yeah. It's good. I mean, it's definitely gotten good. My memory is really bad, so I had to pause to like think, oh my God, what are the tops? Yeah. And I'm thinking Dinner Party from Hell.
Amsterdam, I would say. The Amsterdam fight.
Amsterdam.
Game Night.
Yeah, I start doing math in my head, so I don't know. I don't know about numbering, but very, very good. And back to the classics, you know, we're at a dinner party that is going to hell, you know, which is what they do on that show.
I mean, it's been a long time since Beverly Hills has had a dramatic enough episode where the dinner party starts, you know, at like the 15-minute mark of the episode, right? That's when you know it's a good episode, when the dinner party starts like after the first commercial break, or maybe you don't even have a commercial break. I thought it was really, really good. I was surprised. I was a little surprised that people online are all sort of saying that, like, this is one of the best of all times. This is the da da da. But I did really, really enjoy it. I guess the reason why I had some hesitancy about putting it top 10 of all time, but in retrospect, thinking about it, like, it's not like there's 10 amazing episodes of Beverly Hills. But I would say, I mean, not to shade Beverly Hills, but I feel more like they don't have necessarily like episodes that are legendary. But there wasn't like a big fight. It was just like a grilling and people were getting information that they were waiting on. And maybe the rush of that made it so exciting for everyone. But
I loved it. Because it's all the stuff that we've all been researching. Like all the fans have been researching all these Eric Elias forever. And it's been so frustrating watching it, you know, and screaming at the TV like, you guys, she just said she left Tom because of this reason, but now she's saying this reason. And like, we've been screaming because we've had the luxury of the blogs and all this stuff to get this information. So now we finally get to watch them put it all together. And so it's cool because you're like picking your player because we've already formed our own opinion. So it's like, okay, Team Garcelle and Sutton.
Yes. Yeah. That was what was great about it.
Watching Garcelle and Sutton step up and like see them really call things out was so, but then also watching Dorit kind of like
flip flop
spiral down, it felt so vindicating in so many ways. But also to see Erica like, oh right, I mean the victims, of course they should get, but more, it's like she does not care about them.
She doesn't. I think that one of the reasons why it like read so well with this episode was, like Ronnie said, there was like a lot of release. There was a lot of questions even before the season began about, would this cast ever confront Erica about anything? They're just going to give her softballs. And that's what we were all anticipating. And so I think to see Sutton and Garcelle kind of push back for, you know, on Beverly Hills terms, pretty harshly, was like deeply, deeply satisfying, because we thought we weren't ever going to get that. We thought they would just be sweet and nice, like half the other women were. And the fact that they were actually kind of, Garcelle was, you know, poking and Sutton was poking, I think it was so exciting that we got to have that moment. So I think that's why everyone was so amped about it.
Yeah. It's the perspective of like what Beverly Hills has come from to now. That's why it feels so monumental. But I do wonder, do you have an opinion about where Lisa Rinna stands with this? Do you think the edit she's getting, are they trying to make her villain-esque with how she dealt with Denise versus with the things with Erica now? Like what's the Rinna?
She's making herself villain-esque. I mean, this is like typical Rinna, you know? She goes after everybody season after season and gets all the people she doesn't like kicked off. But then the second somebody does some real shit, I mean, I shouldn't say Erica did the real shit, you know, whatever, Tom did the real stuff, but Erica's complicity, that's what's in question. So the first time that there's even a whiff of that, Rinna's like, what? Why aren't we sticking up for her? And then the nerve to bring up Denise, which was ridiculous when they were trying to get this like false semi-rape allegation, the way they were wording that, like Brandy just got taken advantage. I mean, that was so gross last year.
Yeah.
And so to see Rinna doing that is hilarious because they are not on her side. And so it's been really fun to go read Twitter today. That's for sure.
I will say that Erica's a better liar than Denise is. And so like, you know, it could be that Rinna really does believe Erica, whereas Denise was like, I mean, Denise was blatantly lying. We all agree Denise was blatantly lying, but we also don't feel like it was worth like tearing her apart and sending her off the show for, right? And so, you know, I can understand where Rin is saying, like, look, like Denise was lying to me, you know, that bothered me. But I also think that Rinna has had more scrutiny about the lint in her belly button than she has about Erica Jayne. Okay. She has like not questioned any of this. And for Sutton to be the one who's the investigator when that's kind of Rinna's thing is kind of a fall from grace for Rinna.
And that's probably why she's losing some street cred with viewers, is because Rinna is actually not giving us what we want, which is her being a monstrous asker of questions.
Yes, that's what she does. That is like literally her thing. She did it to Kim Richards. She did it to Dorit. She's done it to like everyone. Denise.
Were people obviously doing coke in your bathroom?
Yeah. And she's like not even doing that to Erica. It's kind of crazy.
It is. I mean, also though, I think that the like what we're getting right now with Bravo is so emotionally charged in a lot of good ways with Beverly Hills, but like with New York, that Shabbat dinner, it was like I every single week, for whatever reason, this podcast, like Judaism has come up. I don't know if it's in the zeitgeist, as they say, but like watching this Shabbat dinner and then being Ramona being such a fucking bitch about, I was like, I said to him, I think that's like the only time I've actually kind of been offended by a housewife show. I was like, this feels really bad.
Yeah, it got bad. I mean, even me, and I don't get offended by I get offended by everything, but also truly offended by not really anything at all, you know? And I was like, yeah, I mean, I get that it's Ramona and Ramona will be Ramona and all that, but when it comes to like race, and I mean, I just don't think now, especially, it's never the time, but especially now, it's like, are you really this bad? It starts to feel like they're doing it on purpose, you know? Yeah. It's like, hey, this season is all about Ramona meeting minorities for the first time. Yeah. Let's send her here and watch what an ass she makes out of everybody, you know?
Well, it's also, I think, like, watching all the women, especially Luann. I think Luann is very in the middle of the season in a way that doesn't feel good to watch. Like, do you remember I think the most gross moment of any housewife show was Luann going, giving modeling, quote unquote, modeling advice to that young woman. And then like now Luann's like, oh God, Ramona, you're doing too much. It's like, Luann, you're not some woke woman that knows how to talk to anyone. So I think you're all bad. And I think that Ramona is sometimes the villain that's fun to watch, but watching her this season is not as fun because it's just dark. It's bad.
I mean, I'm actually, you know, sort of a controversial hot take. I'm still having fun watching her because she is so awful. And mm-hmm. don't mistake me saying I'm having fun watching her for me saying I endorse anything that she says. Like literally everything she says and does is wrong and offensive, you know? And if there are people who like, if her actions trigger people and are like, that is bringing up terrible memories of my life and she should be fired for that. Like I can't argue with that. Right. But for me, like, I watch these shows because I want to see, you know, just terrible people acting terribly in public. And we all are just like, oh my God, I can't believe someone would behave like this. And the Shabbat dinner was really the pinnacle of it. Part of me also wonders if Ramona is just so awful to the crew that they have just set her up to look so vile this season that the public demands for her to be fired. Like maybe is there a world where the producers have gone to Bravo and said, we have to get rid of her. She's a nightmare for us. And they say, sorry, we can't get rid of Ramona. So like, fine, we are going to make her look as terrible as possible and force Bravo's hand. That's my new conspiracy theory.
Honestly, Ben, I believe that. Like, I'm sure working with her, I mean, the 3 seconds I've been in the same space as her, I was like, oh, you are really just not a good person. But I think that where does New York go next year? I think clearly the people working on the show want her gone, but do you think she actually, I mean, I don't see a world where they
fire her. I don't think they're going to fire her because, you know, she's so offensive. But she always manages to do this thing. It's like, you know what? I'm learning. I'm a work in progress and I didn't mean to offend. And you know what? Ugh. She always does that thing. And it's sort of, she always does just enough to kind of like earn like one more episode. Right. And I think that New York, I think they'll bring back Dorinda. I wouldn't be surprised if they even bring back Bethany, oddly enough.
Interesting.
But, I think that New York, they've got to focus on the older ladies. I don't think we can focus on, I think that should be that if you're younger than 45, you really can't be a full-time cast member on New York.
Yeah. Leah and Ebony, how old are they? Aren't they like 35 or something?
Somewhere, I think
they're both really young. Yeah.
Yeah. They're in the
30s. And I think that, you know, I'm okay. You know, Tinsley worked fine for me.
She was actually really good.
I don't know how old Tinsley is, but yeah. I don't get this whole thing of like, we can't find anybody crazy in New York City. Like, Ramona's the only crazy lady in New York City. I mean, I've lived there for 10 years. Trust me, there's plenty of people. There are plenty of people you could pull off the street in there to be pretty funny. So I guess that we're all used to Ramona, but I don't know. This year, the ratings have tanked so badly. I think that it's going to be the end for Ramona. I just don't see it working out for her. This episode, I've
never really seen as much of an outcry for Ramona being fired, but you never know. I mean, at the same time, the internet is the internet, and tomorrow it could be that like everyone is protesting against a candlestick. So I don't know. Like, right. I don't know.
Right, because
not to minimize the very valid, complaints.
Yeah, well, it's also just us. Like, we're all gay guys, we're like all probably pretty liberal, I would assume. And so for us, we're in an echo chamber in a way too, because I was reading the comments. One of my favorite things to do every week after every Housewives episode that's really good is to go to the Bravo Facebook and read what all the audience is saying. And they're totally Team Ramona. They're like, oh, Ebony's ruining this show. There's still a bunch of that going on. And it's like, even after this week's episode, you can still say everything is Ebony's fault. Like, what the hell? Yeah. And they're like, yeah, because Ebony set her up to do that. That's ridiculous. Yeah. You can hand somebody, a freaking gun. It's their fault if they go into a mall and start taking people out with it. Like, what are you talking about? How can you blame Ebony for that?
I know, putting someone at a table with other black people and a Jewish person is not a setup. That is not a setup. That's life.
A setup that's called does dinner. Not make.
Okay.
That's called, yeah. I also think it's really tough when you hear about the core audience of Bravo and like what the archetype of that white woman who voted for Trump is. Like, did you hear about BravoCon before they canceled it? They were going to have require proof of vaccination. And I was just like, hey, boy.
Good luck with that.
What do you think about Bershon?
Get backed up that booster shot.
I was missing Bershon, honestly, for the past two episodes. I want more Bershon.
I don't know, Ben. Bershon was... the biggest devastation when you watch a new person is when you see how much they want to be there. And I know it's like dating where it's like, you want them to like you, but if they show that they like you, it's a little like, get away from me, you freak. And I just feel like she liked the cameras a little more. But that being said, Exactly. And that's why I think that was the tough part of this season is that I think give Bershon another couple episodes and
I think Bershon fit in actually really well. I mean, she fit in well as a cast member, not socially, because she obviously, called Sonia a clown and said that they were grandmothers, which was the most offensive thing you could ever call a cabaret star. But I thought though she really matched the vibe of the show as someone just not very self-aware and ridiculous and very, very self-involved,
And has a story, has an amazing story we love.
Has an amazing story. Exactly. So I want more Bershon, to be honest, even if like some of her political views are, you can't align with everyone on TV.
No, not at all. I mean, well, speaking
not of, on this show,
especially right now too with new, God, I could truly for hours, obviously talk about this stuff, but I do want to ask the famous podcast question to both Ben and Ronnie from Watch What Crappens. The question is, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame? Does anybody feel like really fired up to go first?
I'll fire myself up. I'll give it to He-Man, first of all. He-Man really kicked things off really well. I mean, just like every day, this hot, muscly guy, really wearing nothing, who is like, during the day, he was meek, but then at night, he becomes fabulous and strong. Like, that really got the gears going. And then in terms of like later influences, you got to give some credit to, Diane Wiest, Linda Fiorentino, Kathy Moriarty. They just did great work for my sexuality.
Someone else said He-Man on this podcast. I'm trying to remember who it was, but gosh, there's such a charge to that answer. I mean, and also the old character actresses. I mean, Ronnie, who do you give credit to?
Well, I mean, I guess my gayness was so culture-based before it was sexuality-based that I don't really give anybody credit for the sexuality part because that just like kind of happened. But culturally based, I'm a typical older queen, and I'm a young older queen, but still like Liza. I mean, I think that my parents took me to that when I was a kid in Vegas at the Desert Inn, and I was like, what? Why don't I want to go to this stupid thing? I was just like a teenager. And I was like, wow. I mean, I just remember being like, Wow. I was floored. I'd never seen anything like that.
Wait, so you're saying you saw Liza in Vegas live?
Yeah. And she was just so Liza, you know, like the feather boas and the lights and the like just the whole thing and the sobbing and the crying and the belting. I had never seen anything like that. I had never heard anything like that. And I mean, my jaw was on the floor. I will never forget that.
Yeah, I have to say also, I got to credit Big Business and Soap Dish. Those were two very gay movies in my life that I watched over and over and over again, not realizing that they were kind of like creating building blocks of gayness in me. So those were great. And also, there was once a Nintendo Power magazine issue that was for like Castlevania 2. And there was like this shirtless muscle guy in there who was supposed to be like Simon, you know, the star of Castlevania.
Sure.
And he was so hot, and that was a big moment for me in fifth grade. And then also International Mail catalog. What a great.
Oh, yes. International Mail. And also the underwear section at the department store.
Yes.
I think was the first time I was like, oh, my goodness. You know, like yeah. The man in you're the like, underwear.
Mom,
like,
give me about 5.5 minutes. I'll be right back. And then you're like, and then you start to feel bad because you see the people on the underwear like have like giant bulges, hairless abs. And you're like, I don't look like that yet / ever. And yeah.
Yeah, that's when you think you still have potential for that. And then also,
you don't have to be Tom Cruise to enjoy Mission Impossible.
Also, let's give credit to like Phil Donahue and Sally Jessy Raphael and everyone else. And everyone else.
Whoa. You're overstepping.
No, now. And everyone else who would invite male strippers onto their afternoon daytime talk show.
Okay.
And I would sit there and be like,
full circle.
You look Montel Williams, you just like wait for the episodes when it was strippers. And I was like, yes. Yes.
But also I think that's important about what both you're saying is that we're both talking about like the cultural touchstones and the thirst of it all. And I think that like Liza Minnelli and those Broadway things, they're not only like big belty brassy women, but also the chorus boys are like so like hunky. And so yeah. I think like Broadway stuff for me was definitely like I saw the national tour of Les Mis. My dad is straight, confirmed straight, but like what made him the way he is, which is just, I guess, a Jewish adult male, is that he saw Peter Allen in Las Vegas, and he like is obsessed with Liza and Peter Allen, and he took me to Les Mis when I was like 9 years old, and I was like, I have no idea what's going on, but I like that the turntable is spinning. Oh, yeah. But I think that there's like so much of that showbiz stuff that is just so gay.
Yeah, so theatrical.
Yeah, I think I was late to
Les Mis. I think that. Les Mis would have made you gayer if you had been introduced to it with the soundtrack, because when I first saw Les Mis, by the time I saw it, I'd listened to the album 90 million times. So I was like, this is stupid. Everybody's dirty. You know, gross. I hate this. But when I listened to it, it was Patti LuPone.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's the first time I had ever heard her. And I think I heard something, Lea Salonga. I remember doing that. I mean, just, or Lea no, Lea Salonga, Salonga. Miss Saigon.
Miss Saigon was a big one for me. Did you watch the YouTube clip of Lea Salonga auditioning for Miss Saigon?
No. When she
was
I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah. Ben. It's like she's like, so I mean, good. She's literally like 16 or 17 years old, and it's between her and another girl, and they show Lea Salonga learning the song, You Are Sunlight, and she's like sitting at the piano learning it, and then it goes like montage style from her learning the notes and kind of looking unsure of herself, and then it cuts to her fully selling it on a stage, and then she finds out she gets it, and you're just like, fuck. And now she's, of course, has this incredible career.
Now she's Lea Salonga. Yeah. You know, Tina Turner. I want to give credit to Tina Turner. My mom had the Private Dancer album. I remember she bought it from Caldors, which I don't know if you guys remember Caldors, but I remember being like, what is this crazy record that has this lady with the big hair and these legs? And that album, Private Dancer, became like part of my life. And on top of that, I remember in like fourth or fifth grade, I had this like vision of creating a musical based on the songs of Private Dancer. But I was like, but people don't do that. Like, you always have to come up with original music. But now, of course, we have Tina the Musical. So it sort of like really came together.
You invented the jukebox musical.
I did. I really did.
giving credit.
No, I once did a strip tease to Private Dancer for my grandmother drunk on Christmas. Isn't that nice?
Wait, you were drunk or she was drunk or you both?
Yeah, we used to have these. I was drunk. We used to have these big drunken Christmas Eve parties with my family. I come from a big Lebanese family. We had these huge parties and I was young, you know, and I was drinking way too much. And I did a Private Dancer strip tease for my grandma. And she was like, "That's nice, honey. Good job."
Wait, what do you call your grandma? What's her grandma name?
Sithi.
Sithi. So if I were Sithi watching you, can you give me a 5-second preview of what that striptease looked like?
Me?
You don't
me
have to
doing
strip,
it? No, I can't do. No, I won't do that. I was like 19 years old. There's a big difference. Okay.
Listen.
I was about to say that's a visceral image for all of us is like teenage hormonal Ronnie Harum just riding
on
grandma.
I wasn't sexy. I was just it wasn't sexy. I was just acting out the song. You know,
no,
it wasn't until later that I was
the performance of the song. I mean, listen,
the song. I'm a private dancer, a dancer for money. Do what you want me to do.
Oh, come on now. See that? You delivered. That is, you are the USPS and that has been delivered. I mean, if I were to see like videos or, I feel bad for kids these days to have everything recorded. Like if you recorded me after seeing Bring It On in movie theaters doing a full cheer routine in my living room, I would literally like have to be on watch, S watch. You know what I'm saying?
I am so glad there's not like a huge amount of footage of me from my childhood. Like, you're right.
Oh, my God.
Little gay children, by the way, little gay boys. Well, for going forward in life, we'll always be tormented by these childhood videos that are going to pop up on YouTube because, like, you know what? We're little gay boys, we just love to perform. I'll just like slide in the dining room and just start like just flapping my hands around and singing songs or whatever. And like, you know, I don't know if I would be able to see that version of myself right now.
Oh my God. There were these, there used to be these karaoke, like when karaoke became popular, there used to be karaoke booths in malls and my mom would like let me go in there and I would always sing somewhere.
Just about as blatant as it can be as like, that you're a gay child.
As gay as you can get. Like the most stereotypical kind of gay, you know, that was me.
Well,
so,
the biggest shock for me is that when we are these gay little boys and then inevitably when you come out and like there are going to be some people who are surprised and you're like, roll tape.
Yeah.
Did you not see me at the mall? Like, it's like, I literally have a twin brother who did not know I was gay when I came out and he watched me lip sync to Dream Girls in front of the entire school. It's like, you saw that.
Like, and I am telling you.
Oh, I think that also, that's a big thing that I had one girlfriend in my life and because I wanted to, you know, I didn't want to say no to something I'd never had. And so, but then within a minute, I was like, oh yeah, no, this is not going to work. But I stayed with her for a little too long. Anyways, I took her to for Valentine's Day, Dream Girls, the Jennifer Hudson film in movie theaters and like cut to me weeping. And I think her looking over and just like kind of liking it. And I was like, the math here is not adding up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a real way to show that you
come
are
out.
Closeted. Is weeping at Dreamgirls on a date with your girlfriend. But you know, how many poor, sweet ladies of drama club have had that experience, unfortunately. Like,
and we really appreciate them and love them. And I want to publicly say again, like to anyone who has had a gay boyfriend, you were doing God's work. And if we didn't treat you well, I want to apologize on behalf of all of us and thank you for your service.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. I never had a girlfriend from drama club. I had a girlfriend for 2 weeks in high school, and like we went and saw Romeo and Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann version, and like we sort of held hands, do some of it. But I was like, I don't want to be distracted from the movie. I'm like, I was like, should I put my arm around her? No, because I need to watch the movie.
Leo is acting now.
Yeah, I was like, no, there's no room for romance during this movie right now.
I do want to ask, speaking of romance, I know that we are fans of White Lotus. Do we have any estimates for season 2? Any thoughts on season 1?
I've only watched the first 3 episodes. I haven't finished how many are there? 6?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so I don't even know. I have no idea what's going to happen next.
Wait, Ronnie,
I watched it. I loved it. I predict it will be about some very rich white people played by talented, underused comedians, comic sketch actors, and character actors. And it will move really slowly, but I'll be obsessed with it anyway for some reason.
Yeah.
Ronnie, I'm obsessed with it.
That's all I care about.
Well, you know what's funny is that, what is the actor's name that plays Armand, the hotel manager?
Oh, he's so great.
Yeah, he's good.
He's so good. And
yeah, he reminds me of... Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, because he's Australian.
Yeah. Murray Bartlett.
He is so talented. He's also so hot. And a couple people that we follow each other on Instagram, they told me they were in P-Town a few weeks ago, and they saw him out in P-Town. And I was just like, I won't ask, of course, what the experience was, but I'll think about it.
I was just gonna say that the guy who plays like the douchebag, you know, son of the rich wealthy parents, I don't know who that actor is, and he looks vaguely familiar. I feel like I've seen him in things, but he was perfectly cast. Like, if you have a face like that, you have to always play that role.
He was in the really, really bad Amy Adams movie on Netflix, The Window.
There was a bad movie on Netflix.
Crazy. That is crazy. He does have a punchable face. You're talking about the one who had just gotten married, right?
Yeah.
Not the teenager.
Oh, the teenager drives me nuts.
Oh, yeah, I know, right. He does have a very punchable face. But apparently there's an article with him his wife is the writer, they just got married, that there's an article about how he only plays nice guys and that this is his first mean character.
What? He literally has the most evil face. Like, he looks like the preppy killer, you know?
Yeah.
He does. But the thing about that show that I really liked was that it's about this white privilege and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But you're still not completely against white people because they, like, that guy right there, Murray Bartlett was fucking with him the whole time. He did give him the wrong room. Yeah. Like, that guy actually did have a gripe. It's just like he went about it in such an entitled, disgusting way. But they made it kind of tricky, you know? Mm-hmm. They kind of made you see... They made you see almost everyone's side of it, except, I think, for that guy. That guy, you were like, I don't give a shit. You're terrible. Like, even if you did get screwed over on your room, I still can't wait to see you hopefully get killed at some point.
Yeah.
And you know,
I guess we'll have to find out. Sorry, guys. I didn't realize we're going to be talking about it today. I would have burned through some episodes.
Itinerary, but I just like, I am so obsessed with it. And I know the fact that there are some people that are saying that like it was too slow, that I was like, I don't give a shit. I just thought like it was for whatever. Also, you're putting Molly Shannon there and you're giving us Jennifer Coolidge. Like,
Molly Shannon's in it?
She's in the preview. Yeah. I didn't give anything away.
No, no. I didn't feel like it is a spoiler. That was like from a place of excitement.
Molly Shannon is in it. And I do think that Natasha Rothwell, that Neil works in the spa, I think that she could be in season two. If they were to cast anyone from season one, I could see her like...
Why not Armand?
I mean, God, I fucking hope.
Why not Armand?
The end.
I know. I can suss out a spoiler so easily. I know. I do actually. I like it. I actually like it a lot. But I thought the third episode was a little too slow. I'm like, I do want it to pick up a little more.
But. Yeah. I get that. I think within the episodes, but by the time you finish it, you're just like, fuck yes, like.
I found it slow just because I'm used to watching murder shows where it's like, and then there's a twist, and then they're the killer, but it was never that. I'm used to that, but it was, you know, a good comedy show. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I like
Jennifer Coolidge. Seeing Jennifer Coolidge playing a dramatic role and still being hilarious was...
Well, also, it was like it's so nice to see like a show that is tonally like it. Where it's kind of like funny. It's not necessarily saying this is going to be a sitcom and super funny, but everything's like a little, there's like sort of a satirical undertone to it. There's like, it's got like a comedic vibe, and everything on streaming is so fucking serious. And so it's so nice to have something like this that's kind of like making fun of situations and has funny characters, but can also be serialized. It's serialized, but can also be lighthearted. I really appreciate that.
I do think that right now there's so many, it's tough to like choose what you want to spend your time watching. Cause of course, like there's no end to disgusting murder thriller crime documentaries on Netflix that I could watch every hour of every day. But then you're like, RuPaul's Drag Race is back with All Stars. And you're like trying, and then you're watching an HBO Max, just like give gay show after gay show after gay show. And it's just like, I think that White Lotus for me was scratching an itch I didn't know I had. Yeah. But then when I watched Drag Race, I'm like finding out that I'm tuning out a bit. Do you guys watch those at all?
Don't watch Drag Race.
We don't watch Drag Race. Uh-uh. I mean, neither one of us do.
Who has the time when you're watching?
I
don't watch as many reality shows because we watch so many for this that I just, I don't know. I used to watch more, but they've gone on for so many years that I'm just sick of them. Like, I used to watch Survivor a lot, and I just, like, who can deal? Bachelor I watched for a long time. Big Brother I'll check in every couple of years. I'm watching this year. But other than that,
Yeah, see, I watch reality shows because, you know, when we're done with recording our podcast, I kind of like don't I just need I feel like I turn to TV for light escapism and I'll watch, mm-hmm. you know, something serious. You know, I watch Mayor of Easttown. I am planning on watching Succession. But like I actually do. For me, I get release out of watching reality TV and comedy. And so I watch Survivor. I watch Big Brother. And, you know, another reason why I don't have time is because I'm watching literally two different Love Island. I'm watching Love Island UK and US at the same time. So I'm just like,
it's a lot.
I'm literally on episode 44 of
it's a lot
UK.
Of sleeps.
Like 44 episodes I'm in. Okay.
That's a lot of
That's
sleep.
A lot of TV.
Yeah. Listen, it's a lot. But I will say that we are grateful for those people. And I do want to pivot to other people we're grateful for, which is character actresses, Ronnie yes. and Ben. If the world was ending, you could only save one character actress. Who do you think it would be? Ronnie, I want you to go first.
Oh, God.
And listen,
I don't
want
to go first.
Don't go first then. And also just know this isn't binding and this is a place of love. Ben, yeah. what do you think?
Well, character actress, there's so many that I love, but I mean, I already mentioned her, but I think, and I don't know if she qualifies as character actress, but I think maybe she does. Is Diane Wiest, is she character actress?
If you want her to be, she is. I mean, I think
she
is.
She straddles the line.
Well, name some of the movies of hers that you like the most.
Bullets Over Broadway.
Yes.
Edward Scissorhands. Mm. I mean, Case Closed, really.
What about Practical Magic?
You know, I actually never saw that.
That was a good one.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
That was a good one.
Look, she was great just in I Care a Lot. She was just in that and she was great in that. That was like,
oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was a pretty fun little film noir, kind of ridiculous, but she was like perfectly Diane Wiest in that. Hannah and Her Sisters, she's amazing in that. She won an Oscar for that and also for Bullets Over Broadway. I mean, there's just really, she was in Parenthood. She's just so great. She is a treasure. I think she was on a Law and Order maybe at some point as a lawyer. I don't know. I could be making that up. She could do it if she wanted to.
And I actually heard that Haagen-Dazs bought Ben & Jerry's.
Did they? The Diane Wiest flavor. What if there's like a Diane Wiest Ben & Jerry's flavor? Like
I hate to break it to you. It's not chocolate.
Wiest of Eden.
I mean, listen, right? It makes itself.
Yeah.
Bullets Over Her Sisters. Well, I really like so many, you know. I mean, I like kind of stereotypical ones though, right? Like I like Meryl Streep. I'll go see mostly anything that she's in, mostly because every time she's cast in something, I think, oh God, fucking Meryl Streep again. Jesus. Doesn't she have enough? Doesn't she already have enough roles and Oscars? I don't want to see her try and pretend to be that fucking lady who cooks in France. Like, I don't want to see it. And then I go see that and I'm like, that was brilliant.
I watched
that. Meryl Streep is my hero.
The pandemic. I hadn't seen that.
One?
Julia. And I didn't know Amy Adams was so sad in it, but
when she's happy, like, she's like got that sadness in her.
It's like Enchanted. It was like originally called like Disenchanted because like she's always so sad
and the big sad eyes. Ronnie, wait, did you watch? You make me think of like bad Meryl Streep movies. Good, bad Meryl Streep movies.
Those are the best.
Those are the best. And the one that comes to my mind is Meryl Streep and Steve Martin in
It's Complicated.
I think.
Oh, yes. We just talked about that one. Yeah.
That's a good, bad one.
It's a good, bad one because that also had Alec Baldwin, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Isn't that the one?
Well,
and that's the one where she was a baker and she went and made him a homemade chocolate croissant from scratch.
Yep.
Now, see, that's the kind of unbelievable shit that I'm like, if anybody else did that, I'd be like, get off my screen, you fucking liar. Get off. But it's Meryl, and I'm like, I believed it. And you know that Meryl really did like go to France or some shit for like the summer. Mm-hmm. She's like, well, I'm doing a film. And she went to, you know, Stadge at some bakery or whatever. and totally learned how to make a chocolate croissant from scratch. And you know the bitch will do it for you, like for brunch, just to prove that she's still Meryl Streep and she still fucking got it.
Yeah.
You
know? I remember that scene. I like that late night scene. But wait, did they eat that croissant for breakfast or like at that moment? Because they couldn't have eaten it at that moment because that dough needs to rise.
But that's what I was saying. She it's like it so rise. Unrealistic that they did it. Well, does I don't think croissant dough has to rise, does
I think,
it?
Well, it's
all got smushed laminate. Down with the layers of the butter.
So you guys are doing the dramaturgy for Meryl Streep croissants.
You might be right, Ronnie.
Yeah. I mean, it's an important question to ask. I also say that we love to watch older female actresses fall in love on screen. Like, something's got to give for me with Diane Keaton and
so we're just
Jack.
Segueing into Nancy Myers now, right?
Is that I mean, I guess it's...
Yeah, basically, Nancy always works. I don't love that part of those movies, I have to say. I don't need to watch old people kiss. But That said, I don't really need to like watch Love Island either or The Bachelor. I don't need to see them kiss either.
You
which
just
is
don't
weird.
Like watching kissing.
You don't. Like
I just
kissing.
Don't. I don't know. It's like I'm over it. I think I just fuck so much in my life that it's like, is there anything else? You know, it's not that I still don't like.
That's
it.
The name of the
it's
next Nancy like, Myers movie, by the way. Is there anything else?
I mean, is there anything else? I'm just not. I'm not against it, and obviously, I like it. You know, in real life, but. You know, it's just like there's other things to do.
You know what I hated about Something's Gotta Give? And I have a real bone to pick about it to this day. And this is going to be a spoiler. This is a spoiler, everyone.
Is it Amanda Peet, period?
First, there's that. That's the first. She's an actual spoiler. Spoiled the movie. No, everyone has had their warning, okay? If you've not seen the movie in the past 15 years, here's your, okay, time's up. I don't like that she didn't stay with Keanu Reeves at the end. I felt like that was such bullshit. Of course she should stay with Keanu Reeves.
What the hell's this movie? I thought I knew what it was.
Well, Keanu Reeves is like the doctor that like is sort of a minor character and then becomes kind of a major character. You know, and that ending is a little, it does leave something to be desired. And now I guess you've made me hate this movie that I thought I loved.
That's another Nancy Myers, Something to be Desired.
Yeah, I don't think of the young people. And I remember Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson, but I don't remember anybody young in it.
Did you guys watch that? That movie that came out this past in December. It was a Steven Soderbergh movie. It was like People Are Gonna Talk or something, and it was like all these people. It was Meryl Streep, Diane Weist, Candace Bergen, and who was the last? I was like, I can't believe there's a movie with all these people in it,
and it's called People Are Gonna Talk, and yet we don't know about it.
Was it the one where they were all on like
a boat? They were doing a crossing. Lucas, what's
oh,
his
is
face?
That what it was?
Yeah, it was Meryl.
I was going to say on Zoom.
People are going to talk on Zoom.
No, it's called Let Them All Talk. Let Them All Talk. Who was the other actress in there who was Diane Weist? Oh, maybe it was just the three of them. Yeah. And okay. Oh, but you know who was in it? No. Oh, my God. The son from White Lotus. Wow. See, it all
comes
together. I
mean, that kid is working more than any. Meryl Streep wishes she was a son from White Lotus.
I don't even remember him being
she
in does. That.
She probably auditioned for that role and was like, you know what? Sorry. Got to practice my chocolate croissant.
I just think.
Yeah.
It was a good
that
movie.
That kid was kind of annoying. You know what I didn't like? I didn't like that his armpit hair was so long in that TV show, White Lotus. The kid.
What?
Yeah.
He just had really long armpit hair, and it bothered me. I was
I'm
like,
usually
why
really clued in to body hair, and I didn't clock the long armpit hair.
Really long, like a ponytail long. Like it was real, like he looked like he had two armpit pigtails coming
out.
Did it bother you like that A, it was long, or B, that he was a teenager and it was that long, or C, none of the above?
I'm just Lebanese, so like I look at people who aren't naturally hairy and they don't have like they have non-hairy privilege, and I don't like seeing this kid who's just like, look, I don't have hair anywhere, but my armpit is so long. Like, oh, come on, the rest of us are making an effort. All you have to do is this, like on two little places in your body, and you won't even do that.
Non-body hair privilege is so real. If I see a guy with like a really hairy chest and nothing above the shoulder, like any like if there's just like nothing anywhere else, I'm like, what where's the witch? What's the potion? What'd you do?
Yeah, I know.
Yep.
I know.
I'm the witch. I'm the wall.
And full
another
circle,
Meryl Streep. Another Meryl Streep that shouldn't have worked. Yeah. But Meryl Streep is a witch worked. Who knew?
Yeah. I did not love that film adaptation, I have to say.
Oh, I didn't either. I think movie musicals right now are, I'm glad that they're happening, but there's more bad ones than good.
Are you excited to see Dear Evan Hansen? It's coming out next
ben,
month.
This is a controversial question.
I'm excited. I can't wait to see Ben Platt pretend he's like 15.
I know that was. I mean, I've only seen the commercials, so I've never seen the musical. I only know that one song. I know vaguely what it's about, but I've seen the commercials, and there's like this one shot where he's like in like a hoodie, trying again, like Ronnie said, trying to play 14 or 15 on like a Ferris wheel, and I'm like, who is this 30-year-old trying to pretend to 15?
But he can sing. Like, I can understand why they wouldn't recast him, because he can sing his ass off. I saw him on that NBC show about songwriters or whatever. They were like write for a different artist, Songland, I think. And they write for a different artist every week. And I got obsessed with that over 2 weeks and watched them all. And he was one of the artists. And I was like, who? And oh my God.
The only saving grace of that, what will be that movie, is the music and his voice. Because Matt and I saw the show in New York before it went to Broadway. And we sat at intermission being like, are you fucking kidding me? This is the really? Most fucked up, manipulative, disgusting story. And again, the music is good. Boo, 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 boo. Ben Platt was amazing. But like, I'm not giving anything away when I tell you, at the beginning of the show, Ben Platt's a nerdy, socially awkward kid. Another nerdy, socially awkward kid dies by killing himself. And the entire premise of the entire show is that Ben Platt is lying to the kid's family who died that he was friends with the kid that committed suicide. That's the entire story.
Ew, that is gross.
And so you're supposed his side, and it's like a beautiful story about the human spirit. I'm like, no, Ben Platt's a bad person.
That's a psychotic thing to do.
And it's getting, I have been reading on Twitter, because like the way they're promoting the movie now, it's like, you will be found. This is about search. It's like, no, it's actually about a serial killer child who, no, it's like not even that. It's just like a psychologically harmful teenager played by a 40-year-old that sings really well. That's what Dear Evan Hansen is about.
I like that you sort of did like a Renee Zellweger voice to promote it. Like,
this is a story about a very special boy.
So what? Okay, so he... Okay, I have to know. So he lies to the parents. Why? Is it to make the parents feel better that their son wasn't socially awkward? I mean, what was the reason?
I think the reason is that at the beginning of the show, he is with Ben Platt's with his therapist, and his therapist says, hey, write yourself a note that like today is going to be a good day. So it's like, Dear Evan Hansen, note. And then the kid that ends up killing himself right at the beginning, like, took the note that was printed out of a printer, like at the school. And so they find the note on him. And then Ben Platt also has a big crush on the dead kid's sister. And so I think like he immediately gets wrapped up in like, oh, wait, we found this. You were friends with him. He's like, wait, what? And then, you know, it's like before he knows it, he's trapped in a lie.
He's trapped in this wacky suicide lie.
It's a suicide lie.
I thought it was about the kid who killed. I thought it was going to be like, you bullied me on Twitter and now I'm dead.
I thought it was going to be that
kind of vibe.
I'd much rather see that story. No, it's more like, I lied about being friends with the dead guy and now say hi.
No. Oh, no.
that's not good. Well,
oh darn, I was excited to see that one.
I mean, here's the thing, is I think you are gonna see it, you are gonna like the music, but I hope you agree that we need to circle back and talk about what you think of the plot after you see it, because if I'm alone here, then so be it, but I think it's so fucked up.
Well, you already lost me at the part where he writes himself a letter, because I did that one time, and guess what? The next morning, I read the letter, and I was like, I'm not listening to that fat bitch. Like, why would I listen to her?
Why would I listen to her? The me from yesterday.
Why would I take advice from that bitch?
From a sad girl that was... I mean, I honestly, it's just the whole conceit. It's like Pasek and Paul. Apparently, The Greatest Showman is the same thing, where it's like underneath all the layers of the bearded women and boo, boo, boo. It's like, oh, wait a minute. I haven't seen it, so I can't even give a smart...
I cannot stand the music from The Greatest Showman. Like, I think it's like...
Oh, I like that one. I cried on the plane.
All the choirs on like online on TikTok where they're all singing, when the Shabbos was coming. And it's always the soloist is cracking and the whole all the kids behind have to like cover their laughs. Because the soloist sounds so bad.
Oh my God.
It's a good rabbit hole. I know that I don't want to keep you too late. So I want to go into our final question of this podcast that I did not prep you for. And so you better buckle up, Ben and Ronnie, because the question is, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film? Uh-oh.
Sister Act. Oh no, that's not true. The Color Purple.
Oh, that's where we find there's some controversy here.
You know what? I want to say Sister Act because I loved it so much as a kid, but I actually.
Ghost.
I'm going to have to say Ghosts. Yeah.
Ghosts. Yeah, this is hard. This is too hard.
I loved Ghosts.
See, at last week's episode with the amazing Nicole Thurman, she said Ghost. And of course, we talked about You and Danger Girl, et cetera, et cetera. But I do think the ones that come up the most are Ghost, Sister Act, and what's the other one?
Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Oh, and Color Purple. Yes.
Color Purple. Yeah. Color Purple. I love.
I did not
purple.
Like Jumpin' Jack Flash. I'm just gonna put it out there for everyone. A little hot take.
I didn't love it either, but I think I was too young when that came out, and I just didn't really. I didn't really get it, and I never went back and rewatched it older.
She also had like a run of movies. I feel like in the 90s that were sort of generic, and they just sort of came out. Like, didn't she have one where she like ran a basketball team? Mm-hmm. And then there were just these movies that came out.
The one where Gerard Depardieu is a ghost.
Oh my god, I saw that on an airplane. That I was traumatized. You
say
ever
it again.
That?
I interrupted you.
Bogus.
What was it?
Bogus. Gerard Depardieu plays a ghost of like a best friend of a young, or like a
Haley
imaginary
Joel
friend
Osment or something. I don't know if it's Haley Joel. I think it's Haley Joel Osment, but it could also be the kid from Liar Liar. I don't remember.
Or Simon
Burr. Basically,
one of those.
His mom, the little boy, his mom, played by Nancy Travis, dies in a car accident, and she's like a clown in the circus. So this kid retreats into this like imaginary world where he meets Gerard Depardieu, who's also like a clown with a red nose. And then Whoopi Goldberg is like the caseworker assigned to this kid to like, you know, like post mom death. And I don't know. And somehow Whoopi Goldberg and Gerard Depardieu are able to kind of like meet at some point, despite one being imaginary. And there's like a thing with a ladder. And I remember watching it on an airplane and thinking, like, this is one of the very worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
I only remember watching it a kid and being like, I like this Whoopi Goldberg. And then that's my last memory of it. So it could be a trash movie, but I just remember being like, oh, I like ghosts and imaginary friends and Whoopi. And then I watched Sister Act 2 and the rest is herstory.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate the Nancy Travis.
Yeah. Well, it's also like different generations, like when you were introduced to Whoopi, you know, because like Jumpin' Jack Flash, I was too young for. Color Purple, I was like the perfect age for because I was blown away by it, you know. So I guess it just depends on what year you're born in that you're going to pick. Now, that said, anybody born in the past decade or two isn't going to have much to pick from because, I mean, what are they going to watch? The View? I can't. Although I will miss her yelling at Meghan McCain. That was pretty
great,
golden.
Great, must see TV. But isn't Whoopi, though, I think she's doing a movie or something. Or she was supposed to do the musical version of Sister Act, and then because of COVID, it got canceled, and then there's some movie. So I hope there's like a return to Whoopi, like being an Academy Award nominee. I really hope that she gets some like amazing projects.
Everyone
like that.
Loves her. She's great.
And how could you?
Oh, wait. I take it all back. I take every single thing back. As much as I love Ghosts, it is so obvious what my favorite Whoopi Goldberg movie is. I even mentioned it. Soap Dish. Hello, Soap Dish.
Oh.
Ooh, I can't believe I almost let that get away. Oh, my
great
God.
Great film.
Oh, my
great
God.
Great film.
Okay, because I have to be honest on this podcast, no. I've never seen that movie, you guys.
You have to watch it.
Oh, you're
it
so
weekend.
Lucky. You are so lucky that you haven't seen it.
Okay, good. Yeah, Soap Dish.
It holds up.
Just remember, this was made a long time ago.
Yes, just remember, it was made in 1990, not 2010.
Don't get too offended. Yeah, don't get too offended. But
I thought you were talking like the quality of the movie is
no,
like
there's,
old.
There's like one joke that would not fit with today's standards. But that being said, the entire movie is actually perfection and it really holds up. Like it really, really holds up to this day.
Okay, but that's the one and joke. I can't wait to.
You'll know it when you see it.
Okay.
But it's still hard to find. It's still a classic. Oh my God. And some of Sally Field's best work too. I mean, Sally Field plays like a crazy Sally Field. It's so good.
Carrie Hatcher's in it.
Elizabeth Shue. Kathy Moriarty. Kathy Najimy.
It was Kathy Najimy's like breakout role.
You're joking.
Yeah.
How have I never seen
Robert
this?
Downey Jr. Okay. Movie star Robert Downey Jr. is in this.
Oh my God.
Carrie Fisher. Hot
Robert Downey Jr. Carrie Fisher. Yeah. Carl Reiner.
This feels like a writer's room from Equinox wrote this movie.
Kevin Kline. No, it really is like
Kevin Kline. Next, you're going to tell me like the title score is sung by Patti LuPone.
Lisa Gibbons is in it. Lisa Gibbons is in it. Okay. She actually has a speaking role.
I also think that Trixie Mattel has a cameo. It's like,
I mean, it is honestly all jokes aside, it is a great movie and it is so funny. And it really, like, the jokes still pop. It's not just a nostalgia play. Like, it works.
Oh, I can't wait to watch this movie.
I may watch it today.
Oh my God, what a great
You know
review.
What I just found out?
What?
That it was written, it was co-written, but it, one of the writers on it was Andrew Bergman, who's a famous playwright, I believe. He's really good. But guess what else he wrote? Blazing what? Saddles, classic.
No
my
way.
Dad's favorite movie of all time.
I've actually never seen that.
Fletch. He wrote Fletch.
We'll talk about what doesn't hold up today. Blazing Saddles.
And guess what else? Striptease.
Oh my God, that one was not great.
So, you know, a misstep, but Soap Dish was not one of them.
No, Soap Dish was like, I actually think that Soap Dish is a phenomenal example of screenwriting. I when you look at that, there's all these characters and they all play an important role, even Terry Hatcher. And they just, it just comes together so, so well. I love it.
I truly, I'm honestly embarrassed I haven't seen it, but you gave me a gift of the knowledge that it's going to be something that I will watch.
Hey, we're like your aunties right now.
Yeah.
We're like, oh my God, you're so much younger and like you have so much promise. If you just watch Soap Dish, it's going to change your life.
Thanks,
and
Auntie Ronnie. Thanks,
honestly,
Auntie
just Ben. For the score, the score is this sort of like mambo, kind of like campy mambo music. It's like, and the opening credits are like pop art animation. And then there's like, award shows and it's soap operas and it's just like, the costumes are like over. Oh God. It's like,
see,
that is gay education right there.
It's what it sounds like. And that's honestly why Sister Act 2 immediately became my favorite movie of all time, because the opening credits is Whoopi Goldberg in a Las Vegas review doing costume changes and floating above the audience. It's like, stick a fork in me.
Yeah.
So for this
Whoopi Goldberg had a really good gay movie run right there in the early 90s.
Oh God, and we are so lucky for that.
We are.
Well, speaking of being lucky, Ben and Ronnie, this is such a dream, and you are even more dreamlike than I thought you would be. So thank you so much for coming on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. It just like is such a gift.
Thanks for
this
having us.
So awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for having
us. Oh my
us.
God, of course. I will
congrats
see you.
On your show.
Thank you. And I hopefully will see you in person sometime soon.
Yeah,
yeah,
have a safe
party.
Move or an
go
easy
have
move.
A drink in LA.
Some people wait a lifetime for a moment. I feel like my life is downhill from here. I just had an episode with Ben and Ronnie from Watch What Crappens, and it surpassed my impossibly high expectations. So I'm just going to end it all. It's all downhill. Please listen to Watch What Crappens. Follow Ben and Ronnie. I linked all their social medias in the description. And if you want that full unedited episode with all the juice, that's patreon.com/gayasspodcast. And my handle is at Eric Wills, ERICWILLZ. And we just hit 1,000 followers on the Gay Ass Podcast Instagram, at Gay Ass Podcast. I post all kinds of gay ass shit. And listen, straight or gay, you're gonna love it. I love you. I'm so grateful you're here. Please subscribe if you haven't yet and leave that review if you don't mind. And we will see you next week for another incredible guest. Bye.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.